time for the futures.
Welcome back, my friends, to the show that never ends. Ladies and gentlemen, KSCO presents the Dr. Future Show. If you would like to join in our show today, you can call us at 831-479-1080. That's 831-479-1080. And now, your host, Dr. Future.
Hey, folks. And for the next half hour in our never-ending show, we bring in Dr. Bruce Damer, who has been a regular contributor for many years to the Dr. Future Show and good friend. And for those who do not know Bruce, he is a Canadian-American multidisciplinary scientist, designer, and author, collaborating with colleagues and testing new models of the origin of life on Earth and design of spacecraft that can give us a viable expansion into our space civilization for humanity beyond the Earth.
We're ready.
Bruce, yes, we're ready.
Hey, hey.
Yeah, welcome. Welcome to the future show.
Good to be back.
Yeah, thank you, Bruce. So we haven't caught up with you for like almost five months since you've last been on the show. We last talked about you were involved with Origin of Life, for example, and where life first came from. What's been happening on that front?
That's been really expanding. In the summer, we were featured on the cover of Scientific American in the August issue. And as a result, I've been bopping around the world doing talks everywhere. And various other scientific groups are jumping on board to test parts of our hypothesis.
For the uninitiated, what's the most controversial element of Origin of Life that's trying to be resolved?
Well, the toughest part is it's the chicken and egg problem. You know, which came first, the chicken or the egg? Well, it turns out the chicken yard came first.
The chicken yard? Oh, the yard that the chicken played in, I see.
Right. So you have to have exactly the right environment for both a chicken and egg to emerge simultaneously. And that's what we think we found in these hot spring pools.
Well, the perfect place for life to play.
To play, yeah.
I don't usually think of chickens in hot springs, but chickens in hot water, I understand.
Yeah, we're boiling chickens in pots and making chicken soup. But of course, the primordial soup has to come from some kind of a boiling pot where you get enough stuff together to make a chicken soup. That's where we're at.
Well, yeah, and classically, at least what we've been taught is that it's probably happened in the sea. And one of the controversial elements of your approach is that it happened on the land.
Well, it happened in a hot tub on
hot springs,
a
right?
A little bit of the ocean in a mountain retreat.
Yeah, because in our laboratory work, we would never use seawater to try to make these membranes and polymers like RNA and DNA and peptides. Nobody would ever use salty seawater. So then finally, the chemists said, well, why are we predicting that life can start deep in the oceans? Because we would never use ocean water. It would just block all our reactions. So
the salt water is and not good for biology, you're saying?
It's not good. It's an extreme environment. The best environment for biology to start is a freshwater pool that's drying down and refilling on a regular basis. It creates a little engine that could, you know, creates life.
Oh, I'm sure everybody who's ever had a backyard pond is very familiar with how easy it is to create life in a little pool.
Yeah, especially when it dries up and there's that crud on the bottom and then it fills up again from the next rain and then it dries out and leaves another layer of crud. And before long, you have several layers of interesting stuff that spawn something new.
Yeah, good point, Dr. Future. It's that drying down and refilling, and that creates all of biology. And we're in a beautiful springtime here in Santa Cruz, and we now have moist soils, and that's when biology kicks into high gear. Love that stuff. So we've actually determined that the common ancestor was probably a sludge of simple little protocells that are not even alive, but form a sort of sludge at the bottom of these pools. And we're now making them in the lab, you know, the simplest versions of those.
What? Dr. Damer, you're sounding like Dr. Frankenstein.
It's like a
You're making life in a lab from slime?
50s science fi with the slime, the blob, right?
Yeah, literally.
Literally.
Yeah. But I ask you, though, just if life did begin in the sea, maybe it was a different kind of life. Weren't the earliest forms of life in an atmosphere that was dangerous to modern-day biology?
Yeah, in fact, you've got between a rock and a hard place, because the sea is salty and diluting, so you can't get chemistry to work. But if you're on the rocks, if you're on the land, you have an acid rain atmosphere and you have high ultraviolet radiation. So it's a tough place. Earth's a tough place for 3 billion years. It doesn't have an ozone layer. And so all of life actually starts with this high radiation environment.
And you're trying to look at where it could happen for the first time. We're not talking about hopping from other planets or anything like that.
Right. Yeah, we don't really need that. Earth was a vibrant, water-covered, land-filled world with a dynamic system. It was a really powerful generator for biology. Mars, on the other hand, died really early. Mars lost its atmosphere, it lost its oceans.
But don't you think, though, that maybe it could have had some kind of genesis of microbial life at some point in its history?
It could, and actually I'm part of one of the landing site selection teams for the Mars 2020 rover, and there's 3 sites left, and we're having our next meeting in October where we're actually going to pick which place to go on Mars to go and look. And our team is saying go back to the hot spring outcrop, the ancient hot spring that was found by the Spirit rover, and look for stromatolites or look for evidence there. So we're part of 3 competing teams to go and actually try to answer this question.
Now, I ask you this. If our rover finds a microbe of some sort, what would we do next?
Well, we won't find a microbe on Mars. Chances are there's no organics left. It's just been...
You'd be a skeleton or something fossilized life form?
The only thing where we have a shot at finding is these what are called rock fabrics or textures that indicate bacterial films, which you find 3.5 billion year old versions of them in Australia. That's the only
visible...
Yes, stromatolites. That's the only visible evidence we're likely to find. There's no face on Mars. There's going to be no Martian skeletons. Mars was unable to support complex life ever developing.
So it would be good to look for evidence of stromatolites?
Stromatolites, they're the needle in the haystack. Mars 2020 has a corer device, so it'll pick up rock samples, drilled.
I think we might have lost him. I'm trying to get him back.
Bruce, as I said, is a multidisciplinary scientist, and we could go on forever on origin of life. And it is a fascinating area because, you know, it's where we all came from. Because he's so multidisciplinary, I wanted to try to touch on some of the other realms in which he may help us have some deeper understanding of. And part of that is the origin of our awareness as a species. Why are we so different from all the other species? Why do we have this consciousness?
Yep. Well, good questions. It's time for us to go to a break. All
right, let's go to the break.
We'll be right back.
Okay. Okay, welcome back to the Dr. Future Show. We're just talking about origin of life with Dr. Bruce Namber, who's also associate researcher in the Department of Biomolecular Engineering with Professor David Deamer to develop and publish a paper called The Coupled Phases Model for the Origin of Life regarding the terrestrial origin of life. So, Bruce, people wanted to know more about this. Where would they go?
If they go to my page, Deamer.com, Damer.com, they can see a really cool TEDx talk about it.
Good.
It's just not 9 minutes long, and there's papers for the nerdy people as well.
Excellent. Okay. Well, good. Now, we only have a few minutes, so I wanted to really just touch on some of the other areas you've been exploring. Like, one of the things that was interesting was you were at a consciousness conference and were interviewed by none other than Deepak Chopra. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah. Recently, I've been invited to these consciousness research conferences, and they have non-dual teachers and neuroscientists and physicists, and it's quite an eclectic group. I've been going to 2 of them, and I initially didn't know why, and then I realized if we found the engine that powers up the living world...
It creates life itself.
Creates life itself, then it's probably the same engine that powers consciousness and conscious experience.
They created our specific species consciousness?
Everything. because it turns out that life has a three-way cycling engine, kind of like a three-stroke engine, which is a probability shaper, a thing that passes messages around, and the thing that writes memories. And that all of life and all of technology and conscious experience is explainable by the cycle, these three parts. That's it. And that generates everything.
For everything. So things can break down to that point where as long as that three cycle process is in place, life could regenerate.
Yeah. And what we're doing right now is we're passing messages around. We're creating memory. We're recording a show. And we're sharing ideas, which makes improbable things come into being. Like somebody who out there who's a listener might
get an idea.
Might start listening all of a sudden. Well, I'll tell you, we are the victims of Skype here. Skype has a new protocol where they kick you off randomly, and that's what's going on. Like mid-sentence, they just kick us off.
Well,
it's terrible.
We got to get Bruce back.
Yeah, we do. Meanwhile, Dr. Future is going to do a little bit of wowing us with his questions.
Bruce and I have done some conversations about this topic, and you can hear some of these at his podcast called The Levity Zone. Google search for The Levity Zone, and you'll find Bruce and many of his talks, or Damer.com. Damer.com is probably the easiest way to directly connect with him. He just got back a few days ago from Pakistan, and I wanted to ask about his adventures in Pakistan a little bit as well. Hey, Bruce.
Yeah, Skype is really unreliable today.
Well, apparently, according to our engineer here, they are just oversubscribed, and they've tried to automate their connections, and so they just throw people off randomly, and they've become a terrible service.
Yeah. So let's
switch to Zoom, I think.
Yeah, Zoom. Let's zoom on to a couple of things. We only have a few more minutes, but a couple of things I wanted to cover here. One was your connection with Deepak and the Consciousness Conference, and where you see that going, and then a little bit about Pakistan.
Yeah, Deepak was a wonderful, delightful meeting. He was very interested in this origin of life model, and he gets himself into trouble with scientists, but he's actually very interested in science.
You wouldn't consider him to be a scientist, but
he's a popularizer of healing arts, of Ayurvedic medicine, of diet, things like that. He's not at all a scientist, but he has a fascination for it. So we literally talked for an hour on a Facebook Live session about the new model, and he held up a stromatolite to the camera, and 20,000 people were looking at it, and he was asking questions, and we had just a delightful connection.
Fantastic. Great. So he'll take these ideas and make them more understandable to the public at large.
Yeah, he's starting some kind of initiative on studying emergent phenomena, emergence in all facets, not just life. So I may be supporting that in some way.
Great. Well, keep us posted on that. Meanwhile, you also went to Pakistan, and I thought it was interesting some of your comments on how Pakistan has been changing over the last few years. Now, you've been visiting for a number of years now, right?
Yeah, things are really improving there. The whole geopolitical hotspot thing, Al-Qaeda, the U.S. involvement is all now kind of ending. And as the U.S. leaves the region, China's moving in and developing it tremendously. The U.S. sort of held the entire region back with this conflict that was going on.
So the wars weren't doing Pakistan any big favors.
Oh, it was terrible. It was absolutely terrible. You know, hundreds of thousands of people died, and there were drone attacks on villages, and many, many innocent civilians were killed. And there was really no net gain for Pakistan, as there was no net gain for Iraq or any of these places. Huge waste.
They don't miss Americans?
They really like Americans, and the company that I work with has a big lab there that develops software for the American healthcare industry. So Americans are respected and liked, but the politics and the meddling was not productive. And so now China is the new suitor. It's developing $2 trillion of infrastructure across Asia now.
Something along some kind of new digital Silk Road?
Yeah, it's highways, airports, rail, fiber, a whole new internet for 17 countries called CPAC, the CPAC project.
Along that particular trade route?
Yeah, everything from Bulgaria to Vietnam, immense development as Asia sort of takes its position. China and Asia are taking the preeminent position in the 21st century, and the U.S. is going to be kind of a backwater.
Really? Even with all the innovation that we have in the valley here?
I think so. I think in some sense, Silicon Valley is maybe the last gasp of America as far as preeminence. And Silicon Valley will continue, but I don't really see, I see very little coming out of this country that can compete. Maybe entertainment or this innovation, but certainly not in infrastructure, not in finance, not in energy, not in manufacturing.
All those are going away. So would you say that China is doing it better? What are they doing that Americans didn't do?
They are doing it better. They make things, they make products better. They innovate in construction and architecture. They've got magnetic levitation trains. They do public infrastructure better. They're investing in education. They're investing in a space program, scientific research, all kinds of things. And China's still behind, but it's rapidly filling the gaps. And renewable energy, they're doing huge renewable energy anywhere you look.
I gather they're not getting into too many wars.
Yeah, they don't. As Jack Ma said, we blew $14 trillion on pointless and destructive wars instead of investing in our own people. He threw it back to the United States. He's Jack Ma's defender of their Amazon.
So well, gee, I hope they can keep that up when they get into the Middle East here and stay out of wars. That'll be a good trick.
Yeah, I don't think they're going to do the whole military thing.
Oh, I hope you're right. Well, Bruce, thanks for the update. We look forward to more in-depth conversations in the near future. Thanks for being on the show. We'll talk to you soon.
We'll talk soon, yep.
All right, enjoy your day.
This bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All right, we're going to take a little quick break.
This is Dr. Bruce Damer, damer.com, D-A-M-E-R.
Thank you, guys.
All right, thanks, Bruce.